So, we have our 39 books, and I don't know if you've ever sat down and said, right, I'm going to read the Bible. You start at Genesis 1, and you start to make your way through, and you get to the middle of Exodus, and you think, I'm doing well here. And then you get into all the laws and stuff, like, help. And then some people give up middle of Leviticus or Numbers when you're getting all these lists. And the way I'm doing this course is to sort of jump around a bit by doing the books of the Bible in alphabetical order. So last week we did Acts, today we're in the Old Testament. But I'm putting these three together because they fit in a particular moment in the Hebrew, in the history of the Old Testament. So what do you know about the history? Well, let's forget about Genesis 1 to 11 for a moment, because the story of creation, Adam and Eve and the early people before Noah and up to the Tower of Babel, it's very difficult to put dates on those. But there is a moment when things really kick off, and that's Genesis chapter 11 and 12, when you have the arrival of our friend Abram on the story. You're welcome. So you start with Abram, and then you've got Abram's son. Who's Abram's son? He remembers? Isaac. Isaac gives birth to two boys.
Jacob and Esau.
Jacob and Esau. That we follow Jacob's line. Jacob has how many children?
12
and a girl, 13. And I don't forget that. Then we follow the story of one of the children, Joseph. Down into Egypt. And then you have the whole deliverance during the time of famine there, right? Then you have the beginning of Exodus. Time has passed. Another person arises to get them out of the mess in Egypt by the name of Moses, that's right. Moses, then, his story is spelt out with the people of Israel in the Exodus, coming out of Israel, out of Egypt and making their way for 40 years around the wilderness until they get to the edge of the promised land. And that takes you through Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers and Deuteronomy. And then they go into the land, Joshua, they get established in the land, and they have a lot of skirmishes with the people around the edges, Book of Judges. They didn't have, at this stage, there were 12 tribes, a confederacy of 12 tribes. But they have to have leaders to bring them all together, and they call them judges. They also have at the same time prophets, and Samuel is the most famous of the prophets, and we read about him in 1 Samuel. But you come then to the people saying, look, we want a king like everybody else. And so the first one is Saul, and then David. David's story is a big story that's spelled out a lot through 2 Samuel, particularly, for 1 and 2 Samuel. And then you come across the edges of it in 1 Kings as well. After Samuel, after David, you've got Solomon. After Solomon, you get the split, the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, all right? So when you hear about Israel and Judea or Judah, when you hear about the northern kingdom, the southern kingdom, after Solomon, that's the point at which they split. And the northern kingdom, Israel as it's normally called, does well for a while, but it comes to 722 BC. Don't know what you were doing that day. 722 BC, and the Assyrians come and basically say, right, we're taking over, and drag them all off into exile. That's the end of the northern kingdom. That's the end of the kingdom of Israel. And they never come back, right? They get dispersed and they never come back. Another period of time, the southern kingdom thinks, well, we're okay, we've been the righteous lot, well, that lot in the north were really rubbish. And it comes to the beginning of the 600s, and they're in trouble with another superpower that's come along by the name of Babylon. Babylon deports them in two batches, basically, over a 10-year period. By 587, they're done as well. Okay, and the story of that spelt out in Kings and Chronicles. And it's also spelt out in the prophets. Because while, you know, we might think of the word prophets as meaning somebody who can foretell the future, they were actually preachers. And they were preachers who spoke into the situation of their day. Now, reading back with New Testament eyes, we can see a significance on their words beyond the day of them living at that time. into the New Testament and significance for Christ and for Christian purposes, but originally written as preachers speaking into a particular context of time and place. And so they have the what are called the 8th century prophets. They're the ones who speak into the northern kingdom of Israel. Then you have the prophets that are just there before the main exile at the beginning of the around about the 6th century, beginning of the 6th century. And then you have the post-exilic prophets who are like Haggai and people like that, Malachi, who speak afterwards. So you've got the series of preachers who preach at different points in history. The reason I've put Amos and Joel and Hosea together is because they're examples of three prophets who speak to the northern kingdom before it gets taken over by Assyria. Okay, so that's just a little bit of a history. The other thing that's worthwhile knowing when you're understanding the Old Testament, so not just why the books are the way they are and in the order that they are, and not just the historical overview, but also the geography. Has anyone ever been to Israel as a matter of interest? No one's been. Okay, so Israel, if you know anything about the geography of it, has down the middle, you've got Galilee in the north, you've got the River Jordan, and then you've got the Dead Sea at the bottom. That's a rift valley. Right, so it gets very low. In fact, the Dead Sea is something seriously under, I can't remember what the exact thing is, but it's quite low below sea level. You've got this rift valley with mountains to the east, which takes you over into what's called Transjordan area. And then to the west, you've got where Israel basically lived. To the north, to the west of Galilee, you've got the Valley of Megiddo, which was like a major trading route and military route. If anybody was going to go north from Egypt or south towards Egypt into the rest of Assyria and Europe, they had to come up that plain, the Plain of Megiddo, which in Revelation terms is Armageddon, right? From the on the left, on the west side of this rift valley, you've got the Judean hillside, and that's where mainly Israel existed, and on the river delta, as it were. And then you've got this big plain that's called the Shephelah that goes right out to the coast. That's where the Philistines tended to live. And it's still contested land right down to this day with the Palestine and the issues around contemporary Israel. So it's worthwhile knowing something about Israel as well. So when in the Bible, when you hear things like Edom, the Edomites, or Moab, or Ammon, or Damascus, and things like that, they're all the countries or the little kingdoms that go up the east side of the country, the other side of the Jordan Valley. And to the west, you've got the Philistines. To the south, you've got Egypt. Way up north, you've got Assyria. And way off to the east, you've got Babylon. So it's worthwhile knowing a little bit about the geography. But here's the thing. Coming back to our prophets again, they are preachers, first and foremost. And they are preachers who are speaking into the issues of their day. I often wondered, I was thinking about this morning as I was preparing, if they were to be alive today, with everything that's going on in our political realm, not just here in the UK, but globally, what would they be saying? What would their message be? But if you like, that's the challenge to every preacher, both to help people grow in their discipleship, but also to help the community of Christian disciples respond to the issues of the day. And that's never without difficulties, because as soon as you start speaking about the issues of the day, you've been told you're being political in your preaching and you shouldn't be political in your preaching. Well, actually, who says you shouldn't be political in your preaching, other than the fact that it's uncomfortable? Well, it was uncomfortable in the Old Testament times as well, and they took a lot of stick for it. It's only their ministries were only really recognised after they'd gone. At the time, they weren't very popular. I mean, you read about people like Jeremiah end up in prison and things like that. The other thing just to note is how the Bible came together as an actual book. We said last week, I think, about scrolls. But when you're back in the Old Testament particularly, you're in a period of history, especially before Babylon, when things weren't written down so much. very few people could read, very few people could put forward written materials, be educated in writing. So it was very much passed on by word of mouth. Now, if you're anything like me, someone tells me something and 5 minutes later I've forgotten it unless I write it down. So Vernon Marsh, my former superintendent and chair, used to call it superintenditis. But it's kind of called trying to put too much stuff in your head. But I think we all do that. I think we're trained in our brains in the West to learn and capture stuff by writing it down. We do that from school, don't we? Someone's given a lesson at the front, you write it down in your exercise book. The teacher writes something on the board, you copy it down. All that sort of, we're used to being a writing culture. So we can't think of a time in history when people didn't write stuff down or read particularly. But it was all very much about remembering word of mouth. Now, when we're sceptical about that, there's still evidence to this day in particularly developing cultures where there is very little writing in parts of Asia and parts of India and parts of Southern America, where there are tribes still to this day that are very much oral cultures, as they're called, are passed on. People like soothsayers and oracles are people who, on behalf of the community, remember a story and then have the job of passing it on. So here we have the prophets. The prophets get up one day, they preach their message. People who remember it repeat it. And the message is repeated by their followers. Then the message is reshaped as it's applied to new situations. So I might come along and say, you know, I was listening to a preacher last week, and that situation you're facing is just exactly what he was talking about last week, and I apply it to a new situation. And I might do that last week to this week. I might do it 20 years later because the message continues. Eventually, a crisis normally leads to getting written down. Okay? And the biggest crisis of all was the Babylonian exile. That's when things really got written down properly. We've got to remember this stuff. We've got to remember what the Lord has told us in all our laws. So they wrote it down. So a lot of what we call our Old Testament, especially the law, the first five books, is captured, written down, made solid during that period of the exile. A lot of the history books written down during that period. A lot of the prophetic books. Well, remember that boy Amos, remember what he said? Let's get it written down. And they do it so that they can continue their existence as a culture and as a religion during this time of exile and hopefully beyond. Even if they are completely wiped out, at least it will be remembered. The crisis leads to getting written down. So that's just a little bit about the background to the Old Testament and how it's written and everything. It's sort of important that you know that background so you can appreciate the book. So when you come to a book like Amos and you say, what on earth is all this about? You have to say to yourself, it was written in the 8th century, i.e. between 700 BC and 800 BC. It's written to speak into the northern kingdom of Israel in order that they may get their act together and not end up getting split up by Assyria. Joel, I come across the book of Joel and it's all weird and wonderful stuff in there. Well, why on earth would I be reading Joel today? Why would it make any difference to me? It's a big warning of judgment coming. Again, 722 being the big date there. And Hosea, again, when I'm reading Hosea, it's one of those 8th century prophets writing into that century in the northern kingdom. I'll take the Hosea one just for a moment. I'm sure some of you will have heard a sermon or read Hosea at some stage. But Hosea is a strange character in that he is called to marry somebody who is completely unsuitable. And in fact, she ends up breaking his heart and she ends up going off as a prostitute effectively. And yet he's called to have her back. And he has lots of children and they're given all sorts of significant names. Now, here's the thing. What the prophet Hosea is saying, my people are like that wife. they keep going off with other gods. They keep going off and being unfaithful to me, but I'll have them back. If they'll come back to me, I'll have them back. And so what is a powerful metaphor, really, a lived metaphor by Hosea. I think one of the key verses in chapter 3, it says, "The Lord said to me, 'Go show your love to your wife again, though she is loved by another and is an adulteress. Love her as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisin cakes," whatever they were. But obviously food for another idol. So that gives us an idea of where Hosea fits. And then Joel's a bit of a bizarre book. But I think the basic question in Joel is, how is your heart towards God? How is your heart towards God? It's one of the trickier books in the Old Testament because it points to all sorts of human failings and towards signs of God's judgment and calls for a change in behaviour. If you like Joel, if he was alive today, I sort of imagine him in a little gospel hall out in Northern Ireland somewhere preaching repent and fire and brimstone. That's Joel. And he looks to natural disasters and he says, that's God's judgment on you. He really is quite a fiery preacher. But in chapter 2 and verse 13, there's always hope. He says, "Rend your heart and not your garments. Return to the Lord your God, for he is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and abounding in love, and he relents from sending calamity." So that says something to us about the nature of God as well. But I finish with Amos. And Amos to me is one of the just beautiful books of the Old Testament. And I have to say it's a book that to this day a lot of Christians, particularly those who are very passionate about social justice, are very keen on the book of Amos because it has such wonderful, wonderful passages in it. He comes from the southern kingdom, just outside Jerusalem, but he's sent to preach to the northern kingdom. So he's a cross-cultural, cross-boundary preacher. And the basic question in his book is, how long do you think you can get away with your bad behaviour? I think that's a basic question. Amos was a prophet to the northern kingdom who had been a shepherd or sycamore fig tree dresser in the southern kingdom of Judah. And it starts, it's a fantastic example of preaching in the Old Testament. It starts by him standing up and preaching to the northern kingdom and talking about all their neighbours, all the neighbours who they hate, don't like. And you see those ones up there, God's going to judge them, and them ones, they're going to judge them, and talks about the different things God's going to judge them for. And the things that God judges them for is very interesting, in that it's both how they treat the people of God, but also how they treat one another amongst the different nations. God is interested in them too, which is a message that they were maybe shocked by. But it's interesting, he criticizes all the neighbors, even the southern kingdom, those locked down in Jerusalem who think they're better than us. And then he says, oh, by the way, Israel, you're under judgment as well. And the rest of the book is him spelling out what the judgment of God means to them. So he's a cross-border prophet. He left the comfort zone of his own home, friends, and employment to bring the message he was carrying to people who weren't going to like what he shared. The message he carried was delivered by means of powerful preaching style. As I say, that going around all the neighbours is like luring them in, and then he's got them. Bang. He uses striking metaphors, like a basket of fruit, like a plumb line, that people will know from day-to-day stuff. But the basic message is, let justice roll on like a river, and righteousness like a never failing stream. It's interesting that all three, Amos, Joel, and Hosea, all preachers speaking to the people of the northern kingdom and saying, you really have got to turn around your ways, or this is going to end up in tears. And that's a sign of the love of God, is a sign of the kindness of God, it's a sign of the compassion of God, that he warns them, if you don't turn your ways, you're going to end up in tears. It's going to end up bad for you. And if you like, we see something of the character of God there. He doesn't want anyone to perish, says Peter, but all to come to repentance. But nonetheless, judgment is already at work, right? Because God lets us get on with our own way of doing stuff. He lets us have our own way. It's a bit like when the children were young, when we would be horse playing around in the living room. Alison would come in sometimes and say, "Hey, you lot, this will end up in tears." She was right. It did often end up in tears, and I was always the bad guy. But the warning was there. If you don't stop messing around, someone's going to get hurt. There's going to be a mess here. If you like, Alison gave us the freedom to continue to mess around. But the warning had been given. And we had a choice. We could either stop and listen to her voice or continue. And when we continued, it ended in tears. That's something about how judgment works. I'll leave it there for today. That's a bit of an overview, really, today of the Old Testament, but particularly of those three books in that period of history. So the question is, have you ever read those books? And if you have, does knowing the background of them help any?